from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming to the Pathway Studios, coming to the,
wow,
to the, you are at the,
I am, that's all, folks.
I am at the, what's the thing that the giant chicken says?
What's the thing that the giant chicken says?
Dan did a Looney Tunes noise, and it made me think of that giant chicken.
Foghorn Leghorn?
Yeah,
is that
yeah.
what you're saying? Giant chicken?
I said, come here, boy. What did he say? What does he say?
Well, that's buried deep in the recesses of my mind. I don't remember. I can picture him.
Yeah, yeah. Hey.
Is it a rooster?
We should ask the AI to respond to some advice as if they were Foghorn Leghorn.
I'll do that right now. Foghorn Leghorn was my dad's favorite character. I think I laser engraved a mug for him with Foghorn Leghorn.
Oh man,
yeah.
In like high school machining class.
I say. That's
all awesome. Right, I'm working on that.
Hey, if you do a good Foghorn Leghorn impression, hit it up on the complaint line. He doesn't say I do declare.
Yes, he does. No, he's a southern chicken.
He does. I don't think he says that.
Original or extra crispy.
Five. He doesn't talk about selling chicken.
It's literally his line from Space Jam.
Oh, that's a perversion. That's not canon.
That's a perversion. You couldn't remember his name, and now you're arguing what's canon?
It's not canon. What's that
giant chicken say? That was your lead-in for Foghorn Leghorn?
It's not Foghorn canon. I know that. 515-517-0085. If you do an impression of Foghorn Leghorn, I'd like to hear it. Also, I'd like you to weigh on this canon thing. I think Boove is way out of left field. He's a pervert in the canon. Anyway, here's
what I can't stand you.
Here's what we got going on the show this evening. There was there was a video... there was a men's conference of which Mark Driscoll got chucked out of. So we're going to talk about this. Essentially, he gets out there. He's invited to speak at this men's conference, and he comes out and says, hey, man, there's an Asherah pull out here, and there's a sacrifice to the gods because there was some sort of shirtless man climbing up the pole.
Sword,
doing some sort of
swallowing.
Yes, swallowing swords. What it feels like happened is a bunch of testosterone factory fellas goes, what's the most manly thing we can think of? A dude swallowing a sword, climbing up a pole. And they decided to put it on display at this men's conference. And the Driscoll comes out and basically goes, hey, this is like this is a Jezebel spirit. And starts critiquing the thing, gets chucked off the stage. And then the pastor comes back and goes, hey, man, he should have brought this to me privately. And he starts... I don't know, awkwardly going, Matthew 18.
Yeah.
The whole thing was really weird. So anyway, we're going to read this story. There's not one sane party in this conversation. Like, there's a bunch of iffy parties who have got various degrees of being right. But
it's odd, though, to have Driscoll be like the humble guy on the stage.
Right.
And
right.
not the, I mean, obviously he's pretty arrogant. He is who he is.
Right.
But the dude, yeah, kicking him off in front of, you're done. You're done.
Right.
It's like,
I'm sleepless because of praying for you guys and your Jezebel spirit.
Yeah. Everything about it was a train wreck.
It was so great. And like, I won't show it to you because it takes too much for me to go find the pictures and stuff. But like, they're trying too hard. There's like a Harley in the back. Like there's, I mean.
Yeah. I thought it looked like it was a monster truck rally. Disguised as a men's conference.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay for men to be men. Like, I'm on board. I'm with you. I like to be a man as well. It feels right. Right? But, like, I don't know. It feels like you're trying too hard. Like, if you have to bring an oiled-up man into your men's conference because you feel like oiled-up man just starts to blur the line of whether this is manly or super feminine. And
right.
So, anyway, we're going to talk about it.
But he's muscular.
Yeah.
And that shows masculinity because he's strong.
I just
can't imagine what... actual reaction I would have had if I was there, not knowing, you know, just
I don't know
dude,
if I would have signed up for that.
I would
one.
Have been like,
yeah, what is that? What the heck is going on here?
I mean, I don't think I haven't had a big righteous indignation or anything. I would be like, this isn't real. I think I'm at the wrong conference.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's
yeah,
like, he ascended the pole. We have a God that ascends, and it's like, oh, come on, Mark. Like, what is happening right now?
Yeah, it would be like if you went to. let's say you like it's finding something that doesn't is not enough that you would kind of raise a stink about it, be like, this does not add. This does not actually heighten right. or bring anything to it.
Just which
like,
is a critique.
Yeah, well, that looks like a poor decision.
Like, yeah. Right.
Like caviar at a hockey game. You're like, ah, you know,
like
I don't know.
Like caviar at a hockey game.
I mean, aren't dudes generally, don't they like to be challenged?
Yeah.
And he was kind of at their challenge. I'm like, you know, rethink what you just watched.
Yes.
I mean, you should have been troubled by this.
Yeah.
You're out.
All right. So I'll read the article just so we can bring you everyone up to date. It's super interesting. Secondly, I'm keeping a secret from my wife. And I need...
Just stop it there.
I need you guys to tell me whether this is okay or not.
All right.
What do you think, Booba?
No. But
okay.
Tell me.
It doesn't matter what it is.
I'm interested, but... My immediate reaction is probably no.
Gut reaction.
I'm sure there are sometimes yes. But.
Okay, but your gut says regardless of what it is, you probably shouldn't be.
If it's to the point where you bring it up on a live podcast, then I would say maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you presume that it's a very poorly kept secret if I brought it up on a podcast?
Agreed.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm going to give a nuanced maybe.
Okay. All right, we'll give it
very
a shot.
Very nuanced,
you guys,
Dan.
You guys can try it. You'll let me know whether I need to share this directly or not. Also, we got some advice on Dear Life from the Path. We are not going to ask Foghorn Leghorn, but I'm going to keep that in the back pocket in case we need to hit it up at some other time.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. All right, so let's hit up this Mark Driscoll article. This is from notthebee.com, and I'll read this as it sits. Not the Bee is a little bit more they're casual in the write-up, so it's not like coming from some sort of a formal news source. Says, all right, everything about this story is weird, and if anything, it serves to show how so many American churches have become actual circus shows devoid of sound teaching and common sense. Let me try to sum up what happened. I really have to give some background here, but skip it if you want, and then we'll get to the video. Mark Driscoll is a megachurch pastor who fell from grace over a decade ago. Known for being fiery at a time when almost no one else was delivering fire from the pulpit, Driscoll had quite the following, particularly among young men, until his anger, abuse, and control issues surfaced, disqualifying him from leadership and putting his church, Mars Hill, in the middle of a national scandal. It was a big deal since Driscoll was also a founding council member of the Gospel Coalition and the co-founder of the popular church planning network Acts 29. In the years since, Driscoll has resumed pastoring in a new church he founded in Arizona, but has popped up from time to time on the radar for occasional firebrand moments. We're going to skip, blah, 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 blah. Okay, which is why the leaders who invited him to speak at a men's conference in Springfield, Missouri, should have known he would raise a holy ruckus when they invited a guy to do interpretive pole dance on stage. Yes, the leaders of the Stronger Men's Conference at James River Church in Springfield.
James River. I didn't even pay attention to who posted it. Okay, never mind.
Okay, so yeah. you could see this thing coming.
It all makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Invited this guy, and there was a copy of a man from a sleepy Moldovan town became a seedy Las Vegas stripper before wowing millions as a BGT's daredevil sword swallower. Britain's Got Talent. So the man was a male stripper, went on Britain's Got Talent as a sword swallower and acrobat, and became famous. Okay.
And the church dude says, that's the guy we want.
Bring him on.
Bring on Cirque du Soleil.
I want to put him on. The article says, what the heck were they thinking? Hiring a male stripper and sword swallower for a men's conference. Well, Mark Driscoll had thoughts, and while they're theologically sketchy on the metaphor side, it's hard to disagree with his frustration. And so, let's see here. Church commentary site. I can't share it. So, in general, his comment, he basically comes out and goes, hey, there's a I've been praying for you guys. This is kind of what Booba said. I've been praying for you guys and because there's a Jezebel spirit in here.
Yep.
And he goes, there's a pole, like even at this conference, there's a pole, like an Asherah pole, and a so man with
up
a sword,
on an altar.
Yeah, up on it because it was on a platform. He's like up on an altar. A shirtless dude, just like ladies in strip clubs who are showing their skin or whatever. That was the basic critique. So he goes through and he provides this critique, and he's calling them out for it. And all of a sudden, the pastor from James River basically chucks him from the stage. It was interesting. Driscoll's reaction goes, what was that? And then like the pastor again said, hey, you're done. You got to get out of here. And Driscoll basically goes, I accept that.
Yeah.
I hear
picked
that.
Picked up and left.
And then he picked up his Bible and he walked off. He didn't argue with him. He didn't fight with him. He just said, basically, I submit to you the thing that you're saying. Interesting moment.
Yeah, it was. Right. That kind of stuck out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he left, and then the pastor come back on the stage, and like people are starting to boo. It's not clear to me exactly what they're booing. Like, it feels like some of them could be booing the thing that Mark said. Some of them could be booing the fact that he got chucked. I feel like more of them were booing the fact that he got tossed, right, and like they didn't hear him out.
That's what I think so too. Yeah.
But it wasn't super clear to me, so I don't want to make it sound like the whole place was up against it. And the pastor basically said, "Hey, you know, Mark said none of this. We talked beforehand, and he didn't say anything to me. And he came out here, and like in the spirit of Matthew 18, you should have come to a brother first, as opposed to just airing this out in front of everybody." And that was basically the end of it. And so it was a very interesting situation. So we've come to the first question, which is level 1 to 10, level of appropriateness, shirtless man, sword swallower, climbing up a pole, doing acrobatics at your men's conference. 1 to 10, level of appropriateness. Buva.
2.
2. He said could be.
I don't even know. Maybe a 0. There's no reason for that. Like, there's no reason.
Except for, like, a 2-level reason.
No, I in fact I rescind the 2.
Okay,
it's a 0.
Okay. I say it's a 2. it's okay, Dan.
I'm a solid 0.
I also am a solid 0.
I'd like to know the whole process, the thought process that went through that. Do they have a committee? Do they have a team that plans this? What did the contract look like?
I mean, and 30 decisions happened.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, at so many levels, someone went, it was that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And nobody went, no, it's not.
Yeah. Hey, who's the
like,
guy
not
with
a
sword?
Single
climb
person.
That pole. I mean,
that event was enormous. And, like, the amount of people that went into planning that to, like, get Mark Driscoll there, right? Like, this is a large deal.
Yes.
That right. same group of people that were planning all of those events went, yeah, male stripper, sword swallower. Someone installed that pole and went, yes.
Well, they had to ask, like, hey, what
yeah.
kind of
yeah,
platform
Yeah, what do
you
need? I need a pole.
Code.
That's what
know?
I need. I mean, what's your act going to look like? I'm going to take my shirt off almost immediately, and I'm going to be real shiny because I'm covered in oil. And then I'm going to be on a pole swinging around, and then after a while, I'm going to incorporate sword swallowing.
Yeah,
everybody on board with that? Masculinity forever.
So I'm a little shocked that Driscoll agreed to speak at this.
Yep, yep.
And because I would have, you know, they would have contacted me, which they wouldn't, just because they don't know who I am.
you're too fiery from the pulpit, Dan. Yeah, I can't handle it.
That is the only reason.
It's it. I would have been like, you know, I'm pretty sure we come from different camps. You know, I'm pretty sure I'm going to pass. You know. There was all kinds of misjudgment. But here, let me refute. It went through my mind when he's yelling out Matthew 18.
Yep.
You know, Driscoll could have screamed out 1 Timothy 5, publicly rebuke those who sin so the rest will be afraid.
Yeah, right. Would have been perfectly
right.
legitimate.
He didn't say,
right.
but go talk to him first,
yeah.
personally.
Yeah.
And I don't think...
I mean...
There was also a perspective, like, from what I heard and saw from the article and then also from the video, like, it didn't feel like Mark was coming out on the stage and going, like, this dude made this bad choice, blah, blah, blah,
Oh, no,
blah.
No.
There's a spirit of this already. This happened, and I think he was planning on talking about it and then moving on.
It was like a broken heart...
Right. He like, was even I don't mean this as a specific rebuke to anyone.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, that. This is just this is just on my heart, and I need to say it out in this moment.
We should not be okay with this.
Yes. Right, exactly. And he's like, there's a spirit here. And like, look, the hypersexualization of this situation, we're so numb to it and dull to it. Like, this is what we're offering at the beginning of our let's be men in Christ.
Now, here's the thing. Is like, I think his I don't know that I would connect the things he connected.
No, yeah. Agreed.
It's not an Asherah pole.
No.
Awkward.
Yeah. Not a
no,
pedestal.
Isn't that like a fertility symbol? Like an Asherah pole?
Well, there's a lot of sexual things that
happen.
Yeah,
right.
About, yeah.
Which I can understand that like
I
there's...
I remember reading about.
Yeah, and I can understand that there's a draw between like hypersexualization. Like he's saying strippers and stuff like that. I get like the Asherah pole's rough. And I think, if I don't remember correctly, call me out, but like I think he was saying something like, and then the gentleman ascended the pole.
Yeah.
And like, no, only our Lord ascends and all this, like, just so okay.
I think it's overcooked. His example, I think, is a bit overcooked. I'm not also, I'm always suspicious of people who say Jezebel spirit. I just, I would say,
does
like
that just mean
90% of the time, I'm like, eh.
There's adulterizing happening around here?
An evil influencer, I think, generally. Because, like, if you think Jezebel's influence of Ahab to go take actions.
Right.
Sometimes it's more specific than that, but, like, in general, I've heard people use it in that way. Like,
did Jesus ever call a Jezebel spirit out?
No, actually, you know, it goes to the conversation we're having, I think maybe it was a couple weeks ago, which is like, how much of it is some sort of evil influence and how much of it is, hey, you're being lazy, short-sighted, sinful personally, as a group, whatever. So I don't know. I wouldn't have near have connected as far as he said, but it is completely fair to come out and go, what is this show that we're putting on here? Like, what does it mean to be men, and what does this have anything to do with it?
Yeah.
And like, here's the thing. There's all kinds of places which you can go see that crap going on. Like, the one thing, it's the thing I always come back to. The one thing the church has to offer that is not available anywhere else is Jesus. You can go look at the stripper and the sword swallower and the pole guy, every other place. And so if people come to a conference or any event that a church puts on and the main focus is not Jesus, then like all you're doing is probably putting on a cut rate performance that someone else can probably do better than you. Like we're not going to compete on these areas, and we wouldn't want to. We're going to offer the one thing the church offers that no one else can beat, which is our Lord Jesus Christ.
Yep, right.
And so it's interesting because just a minute ago, Dan had found like a local church who was bringing in the Bluey.
Yeah.
And here's the deal. I don't mind the Bluey. Kids shows, it's okay. I think there's places where they're probably trying to be a little bit subversive, but like generally speaking, Bluey's is an okay thing. There's an episode called Keepy Uppy. It's particularly entertaining, but like again,
wasn't expecting to hear that.
What do we have to offer our children?
Right.
Even then we have the only thing we can offer them. And so like, yes, there's all kinds of things. I'm glad your kids are happy and that they're entertained and that they're not making a bunch of ruckus at Sunday school. However, like the only thing that we have to offer these kids in this building and in our meetings and stuff is Jesus. And so if that is not the priority, then we're letting them down. We're failing them.
Yeah, I feel like I need to make an ad to say Flannelgraph Jesus is going to be at church on this X date. Bring your children.
We plan to indoctrinate.
We'll have no
them.
Ice cream.
That's right. Right. And like, it's not that you can't have fun at the dudes conference. Right, it's not that you can't have fun with the children. It's just like, but like, there is, hey, are we doing this with the right attitude and recognizing like this is the thing that's the important thing. And so like you keep the main thing the main thing. Do other things that support the main thing that are fun and awesome. Like I don't know if I need entertainment actually at the dudes conference.
Right.
I've been to some, and like I don't actually the places where, to be honest, the places where it's fallen the most flat for me at dudes events is when they try to make it feel like you're not there trying to change me. Like I'm there to be refined. I'm there to be changed. I want to hear a guy like lay it to me close and clear. The thing you would do if there wasn't anybody who might take it wrong. And if you figure like because men and women are different, maybe a lady would hear it differently. Most dudes are going to hear it the same way. And so I'd like to hear that. I don't mind a guy being funny, but he better be funny in the context of kind of helping me out. Like, I don't need to be entertained. I don't need to have the fire going on somewhere else. Like, that's not what I'm there for. And, like, if this is our, hey, let's see if we can get my neighbor to finally come closer to Jesus because of this. Like, we want to win them to Jesus, not win them to the spectacle.
Right.
And then hope they eventually meet Jesus because we were kind of dodgy about it.
And I think that weird push for hyper-masculinity, especially in, like, probably American churches that put these kind of things on. Like, it's like this Hollywood Expendables Sylvester Stallone rendition of what a man is, and then we're going to go ahead and tailor all of our content so that we can all – we're taking back what it means to be a man. We're no longer pansies and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't know if we're saying the same things, to be honest with you, sir. Like, I don't know if it's chainsaw juggling and like, hey, man, we're going to set stuff on fire and it's going to be great. And like, we don't bathe ourselves because that's lady stuff, like that kind of thing. I don't need that. Like, we should be crying after like the biblical experience of what the Jesus experience of what a man is. Like, that's the deal.
Which has some elephant, like some of the elements are sometimes you go, like there's only certain types of people who agree to, you know, juggle chainsaws, and you need men like that.
And yes, right.
Right. But like it's don't make me, I want to be a righteous follower of Jesus, not a cartoon.
Yes. Yeah,
and you're trying to drag me back into cartoon, and you're trying to make, and frankly, God looks like a cartoon when you do stuff like this.
What's that old quote? Something about if you attract him with the circus, you'll have to keep the circus. Or
yeah,
it's old time preacher,
right?
1800s or something. Yeah, so we've been doing this for a long time.
It's just
now we're just doing it in more fantastic ways with sword swallowing.
That's true.
Oiled down.
Come to our men's conference. Now, we've got fireworks and whiskey.
Here's the thing. Here's what's probably true. It's probably true that if you were to watch this conference start to finish, I bet 80% of the stuff you'd go, absolutely. Built up. Right. You were saying, like, you're not, most of the time, we're actually pretty close here.
Yeah.
We just keep, we can't hold on to the fact that, like, the gospel does the work. Jesus does the changing. The Spirit does the guiding. Like, we just get nervous when you turn it all over to the Lord here. And so we try to fill in the 20% with some sort of weird garbage. And that's the thing that threw it off. Because, like, I cannot imagine. It's interesting. Somebody I knew, this had to have been 10, 15 years ago, was vacationing. And they said they stopped at James River. And they're like, you should check this out. This pastor is really great. And it's like, okay. So I checked it out. And here's the thing. Some of that stuff that man said was super weird, like real touchy-feely or something that didn't seem connected. It's like Joel Osteen-ish, but also like hyper – again, I don't like saying hyper Holy Spirit because that's not – like I'm in on that. But like not connected to any other parts of the good news type of thing.
Kind of building his own kingdom.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And he was a very eloquent speaker, very good. But here's the thing. 80% of the things he said were true. I would agree with him.
Yeah.
It's the other 20% where I'm like, dude, it just went off the rails. If you just had not said that, we could have cut the thing and it would have been fantastic. Actually, some of the fallibilities of Mark Driscoll, I'd actually put him at like 90%, and that's me giving grace on his Reformation background. Right? Like, it's not that they're not right, but then there always becomes like a man's kingdom stuff in here, or like, hey, we just don't think, let's give it a little extra. Like, you don't need to give it a little extra. And so it would be unfortunate that you were put on a conference where you would agree with 80, 90% of the things, and then some dude's idea is up in the front, distracting the world. And like, I just stop that. Like, in fact, that's what you should do. You should submit your church event idea and then give it to a secondary committee whose job is to go, can I pick out any of this that Dave thought of? Like, can I just run through the agenda and go, yep, that sounds like something Dave thought of. It's out. We're not going to do that. And like, whatever. It's not near that black and white. Like, have fun. But bring in a good band. Totally. Righteous thing. It draws people in. Doesn't cause distractions. I think that's awesome. Have good food and drink. Also awesome. Celebrate. Sing loud. If you want to shoot a cannon every once in a while, I guess I don't care. But like,
AC/DC did it.
Joe, that's right. That's right. Anyway, it was an odd situation. Odd situation. And Driscoll actually, besides that weird Jezebel spirit thing he said, he called out the right thing, which is what I would have liked to happen. I think it would have been cool if he started to say that, and the guy from James River, the pastor, would have got up and go, give me a microphone, let's talk this out.
Yeah.
In front of all the dudes.
That'd be a dude thing to do.
That would have been great.
Yeah.
And someone, and like watching two guys coming from different positions talking about theological reasons as to why we have a problem here or not, somebody maybe repenting, somebody making sure that they're talking about things in a way that still honors the man next to them. What an awesome thing that
friggin'
could have happened.
Through. That'd have been great.
Chucking people. That's a wussy thing to do. Quit being a sissy and throwing people off the stage.
You know, it's really funny. I haven't listened to a Driscoll sermon for a long time, and it just so happened this morning. I was doing some painting in one of our rooms here, and I thought, I'll just throw in a just random sermon. I just threw in a text, and he popped up, listen to that.
Yep.
And he was like so – it was in his new setting.
Yep.
And he was all hyper excited. I'm so excited to be here. And he was screaming, and I thought, dude, you're trying really hard. But it was still pretty good, solid stuff. And then, all this information started spreading, you know. And I thought, wow, this is really weird that I have two things on Driscoll on the same day.
Such a weird deal.
What an incredible way to break down the good news is to like see 90% truth and then 10% and then people that are just shaky on this stuff just fixate on the 10% and then miss out on so much truth.
Yeah. I don't know if it's me getting older or maturing finally or something. I could give a rip if people like me if they are impressed with my style or anything.
Yep.
I'm just much more, I guess bold is the word to use, with talking about stuff than I used to be, because I'm just like, this is, you need to hear this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, this is scripture. This is Bible. And this is what it says. And I don't care if you're...
Right.
Think it was cool.
Your argument's not, I mean, it's not with me.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly.
I don't have dancing elephants in the back, and that's all right. You know, we're here. You're going to look at this, and you're going to hear what God has to say, and then you have to decide what to do with it yourself.
And it's, I mean, both of you are in pastoral situations where I'm not, but like, I can't, like, it's the truth of the matter is like, you are presenting the words of a God that is right,
yeah,
and just,
yeah,
and love incarnate to people that believe that they know better what is right and what is just and what is love. It's like a creation that finds themselves begging the creator to prove himself to them.
Yep. Yeah.
It's crazy to me. Mm-hmm. Like that shit. And I've been there, obviously. I've been the creation asking the creator to prove himself to me before. But like, it really is like when I hear these the arguments against the moral authority of God and all these different things, it's like, how could a God do this? And how, it's like, you realize that you're arguing that you believe or have created this infallible, perfect morality that God is then breaking, and you aren't the one breaking. Mm-hmm. Like, you're asking God to answer to your understanding of morality. And I can't even imagine that, and how broken people are by seeing that kind of, it's just craziness. Like, yeah, it just, yeah. I don't, it just, wow.
My God would never judge anyone.
Right.
Well, you're not going to see your God later. So,
It's like, do you even understand what justice is, yeah, to be able to say that my God won't judge anyone? Do you, yeah, understand love enough to say that, like, God doesn't love, like, you don't get that, I don't think.
Right.
And it's, I guess... It's interesting because that's kind of colored my recent Bible reading has been on this most recent bout running through it has been, you know, I really want to continue myself to the point where like I stand or I kneel in front of the Bible and go like, this needs to change me. I don't need it to change to me. Yeah. I need to change myself to it. And especially going through some of the Old Testament stuff where it's like, I don't know. I don't understand. Like, why? I don't know why God would act this way. I don't know how God's justice is shown here, but if I hold true that God is completely love and completely just, and those two things are not working against each other, then this move that maybe I wouldn't have made in my lack of wisdom versus the omnipotent creator of the universe, that like, this is love, and I need to bend my spirit to understanding that that's the love of my Father, and I don't understand it all the time, but like, I've been doing this for a long time, so I can only imagine being someone that just flat out has not spent time in the Word, has not spent time feeling blessed by God and feeling like your life is a gift by God. I understand why people are breaking this kind of stuff, but like, it's just craziness to me. Sorry, that was a super random thing to interject, but
no, yeah, it's okay. And I think one of the key things in a lot of those types of discussions is people want to hold God to task for things that they've abdicated,
yeah,
things that they're not willing to breach. So, like, for example, take the judgment of the Canaanites. You're like, is it fair that God wiped out the Canaanites? And so if you're presented with the option, like, you're like, I think God shouldn't be able to do this, or I thought it was wrong. So what is the right punishment for a society who sacrifices children? Like, nothing?
Right.
Nothing? I should let – where's the justice in that? Why is that okay? Right? Like, to what extent – You bailed, like, because you're not on the hot seat. You're not the person. There's an episode of the show 24.
Of course there is.
And Vice President Noah Daniels has taken over. He's been critical of the president. And he finds himself, the president gets in, is unable to discharge his duties. So now he takes over and runs through a series of events of which is very stressful and difficult to deal with. And so getting towards the end of the season, he goes, you know, I had no idea what it was like to sit in this chair. You can't. You can't until you've sat there. It's easy to kind of critique it from afar and think you know all the things. But like, until you've sat there, you don't really know. And it makes me think a lot about how people interact with the Lord. So like, in general, people, like, they want to not take responsibility for what do you do with a society that acts that way. And they want to blame God, and then they can't answer morally what to do. Like, what to do, because it's not one person. It's a belief structure. that will continue to sacrifice children. Yeah, sure, you could go through and say, well, take out the guy who sacrificed the kids. Okay, and then wait another 10 years for the kids grow up, and then they start sacrificing their kids now. Like, it was a societal issue. And so what is your sense of justice? Like, a lot of the people who are having that critique, I think it's a right question, because it's difficult.
Right.
It's difficult to look at. It's difficult to say, Lord, sure, there were a lot of really perverse things going on, but weren't there innocents? Isn't it the same question that Abraham is asking before Sodom and Gomorrah?
Right.
He's saying if there's 40, if there's 10, you know, whatever. Like, if there's only a few righteous people, will you stay your hand? And in that reckoning, there weren't.
Right.
But like, you know, do I trust? Do I have this? There's a part that I actually don't have a problem at all with God's judgment upon the Canaanites in general. What happens to the potential innocent women and children?
Yeah.
And probably a few dudes. That's the thing that requires trust. It doesn't require trust for me to accept that, like, if he's a God of justice and justice need to be dealt out, justice was dealt out. We don't generally even have a problem with this. You're okay with the police arresting people who did the wrong thing. You're generally okay praying that God would intercede in a spiritual, unnatural way when you want the abused victim to stop getting abused. Because what would normally keep happening is they keep getting abused. When you're praying about it, you're asking God to step in. So, like, you're totally in with God intervening in all kinds of ways, and you right. believe it to be fair. And so those are things I don't have trouble trusting God. It's the peripheral things. Like, right. And so then I have to say, well, I have to trust that God either, like, that was a mercy of his to them in some way or another. Like, maybe he rescued them. Maybe in some way or another, he allowed for them. It's the same way I think about unborn babies, or like the grave injustices in the world. Like, God's going to have to be trusted. Same thing, he's got to be trusted on the what if you don't get the good news to everybody. I actually think we're pretty close. But like, I have to trust that God has this handled. So there's some of those things which are like really good questions, because it reckons with the reality of God. If those questions didn't exist, I would say you don't actually believe it. Right? Because like a person who's concerned about doing the work of Jesus goes, well, shoot, man, if there's a reckoning to this and some people didn't know, what the heck is going to happen? You should care about it. If you care about God and you care about people, it's a great question you should be asking. You should be asking, how do I understand God's justice when there may be circumstances of which misbehavior on the earth spreads out onto other people? The
right.
sin of people of one guy fell onto other people. Why do they have to bear the consequences? How is that fair? How do I understand these things? As the moral center, you should be able to ask those types of questions. But a lot of times that we're just abdicating. Big people who are arguing with God are just they wouldn't sit in the same chair. They'd say, "Well, society will work itself out." It never has.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the morality of the people will solve this situation. No, it will not. It never has.
Right.
Right. Like, the as a matter, and it's interesting, because they're like, you know, why do we need the morality from God? Like, won't most people? We all agree that murder is wrong. Well, that's interesting, because 200 years ago, we did not all agree that owning a man was wrong.
Right.
We did not all agree that you couldn't treat them as property. We did not all agree of all kind that that just because you weren't born in this country, we should be able to round you up in different camps. Because your people may be against us somewhere in the world.
And like, admittedly, as a species, we still don't all agree that you can't murder.
Yes, right. We think it's okay. Maybe if you're not old, maybe if you can't survive on your own. Although you are allowed to kill a baby and you can't stab a guy in a ventilator. We're duplicitous in this particular matter. And so, like, we don't all agree. And, like, the majority, like, might makes right, the majority making the moral decisions, like, that has been dangerous everywhere for all time. And so you don't actually believe that, but you're willing to buy it because you don't want to have to accept that maybe there's a God with a moral load that comes into the world. And I get it, man. I hear what you're saying, brother.
Yeah.
Some of the things in life would be a lot easier to go if we could just go with the crowd here, because the crowd is getting real loose and real self-focused and self-centered. A lot of things that I might enjoy. But, like, you can't. You can't. It's out. Anyway, another time. Take a deeper. All right. Well, speaking of moral problems.
What are you hiding?
I'm hiding something from my wife, and I want you to tell me whether it's a problem or not. Here's the setup. My wife has it comes up. We've got 4 kids, 1 dog, 2 cats, about 15 I had 16 laying hens, and I think I'm down to 13 because there's a coyote around my place, and he's got a hold of three of them.
Okay.
I fired a warning shot about a couple of days ago. It seems to be working, but now I got to wait him out every day this week to make sure it doesn't come back. And also in the garage, there are roughly 50 more chickens, 30 of which we are going to ceremoniously murder and eat. The other 20 are going to start laying eggs. There's a decent amount of land at my house, stuff to mow, stuff to fix. It's an old place. So lots to do, lots going on. We have a gravel driveway. This is the big rub in my house, which means every time you open the door, walk in from the road, there's dust everywhere. Like there's no keeping up with the dust. It's bad. And so anyway, it's common that my wife feels like she's carrying too much of the load in making sure the house continues to run successfully. Because we also homeschool, and so she's got a burden during the day to do those things. And so I also always don't take this particularly well. I always think I'm doing a pretty good job, and I find these critiques unfounded. I'm generally wrong about that. I know that. I know enough to know that.
Okay.
And so the last time this came up, and I'm also prone. I don't think she's going to be offended. I'm not telling you anything that like – most of this makes me look bad, and so I don't think there's anything offensive here about my wife. But like most of the time when she brings something like this up, I tend to overreact. And so I'm prone to going, fine, if no one's doing enough already. And
you're
then
off
like
the stage.
Yeah, right. Like I'm like hyper-focused on it for like 3 or 4 days. I'll be up to 1 a.m. fold laundry, sweeping floors. And she's like, "Hey, we should get ready to go to bed. Maybe we can, you know, go to bed at the same time tonight." I'm like, "Can't fold laundry." Here's the deal: she's done that to me plenty of times in a non-nefarious way. Like, "Hey, I'll be up in a minute, but we got to fold the laundry." I'm probably not doing it with the same general heart, but it's also reality. Like, I also think there's probably too much going on. It's very difficult to balance all the things. She is more prone to thinking we can do all the things. I'm more prone to going, I don't think we can get all that stuff done. We're gonna have to cut some anyway. So, I want to say about a month ago, this conversation comes up again and I was about to respond and I didn't. I just said, "Okay, I understand. I will try to focus and do better." And so immediately I opened up my note keeping app on my phone. And I put the today's date, and I said, I'm going to log all the stuff that I do because I feel like maybe she's not recognizing that there's a lot more going on. I legitimately thought that, and I probably actually still think that to a certain extent. She's busy. She doesn't recognize. She's more prone to noticing when you didn't do the wrong thing than the right thing, which is common for busy people. They notice the thing that caused them, interrupted them.
Right.
So I actually don't, I recognize that it's not a particular like moral fault. It's just a byproduct of her personality. So I said, I'm gonna keep track of this stuff. But it was like when I first opened the app, it was kind of a snotty. I'm like, I'm gonna keep track of this. I'm gonna show her. So the next time this comes up, I'm like, "Hey, didn't you see? You were wrong about this." And then about an hour after I'd started the note, I thought, you know, I don't know whether I actually do as much stuff as I think I do. Like I go to bed at night and I'll be at, we're up late. Like we might be up till like 1:30 most nights. And I think that I've spent my time righteously, but I don't actually know that. I'm just under that impression. And so I thought, you know, this actually is probably a really good thing so that I can look at the end of the day and go, regardless of whether my wife is right or wrong in this particular scenario, do I feel comfortable how much I am contributing to my house running? Now, again, for clarity's sake, like I'm not sitting. Like I'm busy, but I don't know what I'm busy in actually. and it may be things where like, not that it's not a righteous thing, but like if I had to choose between one thing or the other, could I go 2 weeks and not fold anything or switch the laundry? I might do that. I might think that I wash they load the dishwasher all the time, but maybe actually it only happened twice last week. And then I got busy with other things and it was okay to me that I didn't do it. But like the reality was I only touched it, which means all kinds of things happen at my house that I'm not keeping a reckoning of. Right.
Yeah.
And so I thought, hey, this is going to be really good now. So I start keeping track of it in my notes folder. I don't want my wife to see it because I don't want her. Two things that I'm worried about. One, I don't want her to get the wrong impression. I don't want her to – like the thing that I started it for is not why I'm continuing to do it. I've been doing it for about a month. And I'm afraid if she opens up, the notes, that she'll see all these logs and journals. And it looks like I'm trying to stack up a bunch of stuff, as some sort of critique to her. And like that died about an hour in. I'm actually not doing it for that. And I have found, you actually get to the end of the day, towards 9, 10 o'clock at night. And maybe there's only two things on the list and I'll go do other things. Because I don't want, if I needed it to facilitate a discussion or to feel like I'm actually contributing to the house, like I there's only two things on here.
Right.
Could I go do something? And so like I'll go sweep the floor when my inclination was not to do it. So it's actually been super helpful to me.
Nice.
And I actually think I'm doing much, much better and realizing places where I might be prone to thinking I did good things and didn't. The second thing is, and this is where this – like the first one if that was it I feel like I could probably have that conversation, realistic with my wife. The second thing is, and this goes back to kind of a personality thing, maybe even to me, this is really on the couch, this type of thing. My wife is not a super encouraging person. She knows this about herself. And I am not generally encouraged by her. She does not motivate me. Because it tends to be – because, again, she tends to notice things that aren't done well or not – didn't happen or fell short of her expectations. It's not likely to be a compliment in there somewhere. And so I would be so disheartened if she were to find the list and have a negative reaction to it.
Right.
And it, but it's very – it's helping us. It's helping us. It's helping me and it is helping us. Even though I'm not sure – like she hasn't said anything about it. For like a month, like there's been no hey, things have been different because again, it's probably what she expected to begin with. but in the back of my mind, like in fact, she went to go grab my phone and she was looking for a note where we keep track of updates that we're going to make to a particular room in the house. Like I've got all those notes and they're shared with her, but her phone wasn't close, so she grabbed my phone and opened up the notes app and I took my phone from her. I said, hey. And I told her, I said, look, there's something in there that I don't want you to see. It's not bad. There's nothing wrong with it. But like, and I'll show it to you eventually, but like, I don't want to show it to you right now.
Yeah. Right.
And it felt okay to me to go, look, I just want you to trust me. I'm telling you it's not a problem. Cause like, what, I don't know what kind of nefarious thing I'm going to have in my notes app anyway. So like, it feels like it's very low possibility, but at the end of the day, it is something that I'm not openly sharing with my wife and that at risk of her seeing it, I did take my phone from her and said, I'll find the list for you or I'll go get your phone. And I know, and she's like, I don't like this. I'm like, I understand what you might be thinking. But again, think about it. What could be happening in the notes app? And I promise you there's nothing weird going on in here. Is it okay? And so one, my situation, but then I thought like, is it okay that you have is a spouse okay to have a personal journal? A place where they digest their thoughts. Because sometimes I remember I've had this conversation during an argument with my wife that like I wanted to stop talking about it because I said, I don't think I'm handling this well and I need to think about it.
Yeah.
And saying out loud, like I don't know that I love her and I'm with her forever. She's my life partner. But sometimes she's not the most helpful to me in trying to go walk through my own thoughts.
Yeah.
I need a little bit of space. Is it different that I wrote it down and looked at it and didn't give it to her to go look through? And so as much as I'm all in on like your phone should be totally open, you shouldn't be like it's not you don't want to start down a slippery slope on hiding things from your wife.
Yeah.
There is a reality to at least in my mind now that goes, look, you know where this may not be best. If she were to see that list and she may take it the wrong way. And like, that's something we probably should work through anyway. And maybe, and we are like, we just both approach things in different ways.
Yeah.
She's working on being more encouraging. I'm working on being not a lazy loafer. Okay. But that doesn't change the reality that like something that's being valuable to us isn't, I don't know. My first inclination would be not to show her. So am I wrong? Am I wrong in doing that? And maybe to tackle the personal journal thing too.
I think you've overthought it. And made it worse than it is.
Okay.
Because now it is. Now she's thinking about it. Now it is a secret.
Okay.
And your mind just goes to the worst things, whatever that is to her. I mean, oh, he's planning
a getaway
to Colorado
with Louise down the road.
Yeah, whatever.
Dang it, Louise!
But I think if you just, when the time comes, like you even said it, you know, just, hey, this is my accountability thing. I'm tracking myself because I haven't tracked myself well, and so this tracks me and lets me know, oh, look, I am lazy.
Yeah,
and so yeah, I think your motive is right, but maybe just more honesty in the. I mean, what's to be angry with? I'm trying to track myself. You don't have to tell her that you originally did it to track yourself to show her a thing or two because it changed so quickly that that's not you would have deleted it.
No, that's true. The second thing probably is more relevant where it's very possible she will not be impressed with the list.
Because, I mean, she can have her own list of ways, how can I encourage Ben? And that wouldn't freak you out. It'd be like, oh, yeah, let me help you.
No, but here's the thing. Like, if the shoe was on the other foot, if she goes, hey, I write things down. I keep a journal for myself. I don't really want you to look at it. I wouldn't care one bit. I'd have no reason to care.
Right.
I don't care.
It's messy because I've argued with myself listening to this from like three different places already on what is right and what is not. Interestingly, from the whole you should never keep secrets to, well, maybe so. I mean, this is a harmless secret to, well, who is believing it's harmless and who could be harmed by it, all that stuff. But like, I totally understand where you're coming from when it comes to like, this is something you're legitimately putting effort into. And this is something that you've recognized is something you want to work on and you're proud of yourself for. Like, you have every right to have a pride in this of like, hey,
it's changed behavior.
This is now accountability that I have continued to change this behavior. It's something that I don't like about myself and I'm working on. That would be crushing to have that laid bare. And then someone who has historically been not that encouraging to you. And again, by your own admission here, is not the best at like seeing the progress. They just see that 70% means 30% isn't done, right?
Yeah.
Like, that would be devastating to me too.
Yeah.
Like to have that run into. And I think that you've accurately figured out that there's something in there that needs to be worked on between the both of you, of whether it's you figuring out a way to find the encouragement in the way that she's doing things, on top of her also trying to find more encouraging ways to say things. Like, there's give and take in that, and I think you recognize that. And I think that's one of the more healthy things that you've done here, is to recognize that, like, hey, there is improvement to be made, and this is something that could be, a magnifying glass onto that to go, hey, I noticed that I started doing this list out of spite. It only lasted an hour where it was not even spite. It was more just, I'll show you once you ask me about this again. But then, you know, you did the right thing of turning it into something that was good for you. But like, like that's this messy. It's really messy. I don't think you're doing anything wrong by saying, hey, this is something that I'm not ready to talk about now. I don't think you're holding anything that's hurtful. I think that there's a level of looking at the entire relationship that you guys have had where she can go, this is not a secret that I need to be super worried about based off of like all of our history, all of the community that is in, all of these different things. He's willing to be open and honest about this kind of stuff. You've said plenty of things about this. Like, it doesn't sniff as though this is going to turn into a really bad thing. Yeah. And so that's why I'm not super inclined to say that like this is dishonest and like, you know, you need to come clean about this because it's something that's you're hiding behind her back. So, I mean, I just, for lack of a better advice than just empathy, like, I can understand why that's messy and I can totally understand why you're trepidatious.
So back in the day before there were smartphones and we had paper calendars and everything, my wife and I had a difference of opinion on the frequency of intimacy. That never happens. I understand.
I think that's uncommon, Dan.
Yeah, it's uncommon.
Tell your weird story.
I've never even heard of this before.
Yeah. So because I knew it was so uncommon, I decided in my little paper calendar I was going to put an X.
Yeah.
Whenever intimacy happened.
Yep.
And my whole purpose of that was so I could show her See?
I counted.
You think it's a lot more often than it is.
Right.
Now, I have never told her about that.
Yeah.
Ah.
And I never followed through after, like, however long I finally thought, okay, this is ridiculous, and I don't have a good heart on this. That's what you have to be careful of. But you stopped yourself quickly.
Yeah.
You fixed it very quickly.
So, yeah. I just wanted to say the word intimacy.
No, I think that's fair.
Yeah. Wow, Dan.
I think that does bring up an interesting point, because that is one of the things I considered, is that there are also sometimes in those conversations I do feel like I'm dealing with unnecessary feast famine, like no one's and everybody's or none of the time or all of the time type of stuff, and I'm like, I know that's not the case, but here's the thing, even though I know that to be true. Whatever the perception is my wife's perception is that it's often enough that she sees it as all the time, you know, everybody always does blah, 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 or no one ever does blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, that's probably not right. But the semantics may not matter. Either way, if I hear my wife rightly, what I hear her saying is that she feels like she's overburdened and doesn't have enough help. And I don't know, our kids are old enough and probably shouldn't be doing leaving things out and all the other things that we're doing. And so this felt super weird to me. Because it was so rudimentary for a man who's been married, I'll be married 20 years next year, to start with the assumptions just presume your wife is right and take it from there.
Yeah.
If I just said in some way or another, and this is what's been helpful in this particular conversation, is in some way or another, my wife is probably right. Yeah. And so why don't I figure that out? Let's figure out in what ways she's right. And then if I have some sort of feedback on in ways that she wasn't right – she doesn't even know. Here's the thing is that I don't even know that I would ever have to tell her that I have a list.
Right.
But if she goes, it would help me jog my memory if she were to say something like, hey, you know, no one ever helps out with the dishes. I would go, actually, I'm pretty confident I did the dishes six days last week. And so I hear what you're saying, you needed some help yesterday and no one was around or whatever.
Yeah.
But I need to pull you back because she is still my wife. I do still need to make sure that our household is representing to each other correctly.
Right.
I have to tell you what, most of the things that I'm trying to mediate between children and wives has to do with someone exaggerating. And so I am the middle. I'm the mediator. I'm the voice of reason that goes, what you're saying, I understand why you're reacting that way in this situation. It is not fair to talk about your mom as if that is always the case. So let's focus on this particular situation. Sometimes it goes the other direction. And so that is a ground of which I wish to hold to make sure that we're actually solving the right problems. The wrong problem is no one does any dishes. The right problem is everybody was tired last night and went to bed and left my wife to pick up the dishes or something like that. That's the right problem. That's not everybody sucks all the time. You know what I'm saying? And so it would be – I frankly don't have a good memory. I don't remember things that I've done. And so, okay. I think this gives me some room. She doesn't listen to the show. Otherwise, I would have just given the whole thing away right now. Maybe I'll just say, hey, you should listen to last week's show.
sorry to interrupt you. I apologize there. But if you were to tell her that you have this list and that it has been helpful for you operating as after the hour under the guise of let's find out. Where's the truth in this? My wife is right here. Let's find where it's at. And I found that I feel more productive and able to call upon the things that I've done by having this list. I'm willing to show it to you and share to you that I have it. But what I'm not asking for is you to take this opportunity to then tell me how much better my list could be. Because there's a certain level of I'm willing to be open about this. But I'm not asking this as a level of please give me all of the feedback about how much better I could be. Take this in as a way that this is helping me to achieve more transparency and or productiveness, productivity, excuse me, in what I'm wanting to do.
Meeting expectations.
Right. This is for me. This is not supposed to be an evaluative thing for you to be able to look at and go, see, no, you weren't right and blah, blah, blah. This is for me now. This exists, and that's what I was worried about showing you.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm 50-50 on how that might.
And that's totally fair. That's why I'm asking it as a question, not offering it as advice.
Yeah. I think maybe based upon you guys' advice. I think maybe what I'll do is I'll say, I'll ask her, I'll say, look, this, the thing that's in my notes is the thing that's for me. It's helping me to be better.
Yeah.
Specifically in reaction to things that you have communicated to me that you would like to be better. That's what it is. If it's important to you, I will let you see it. My preference is that not, because like it's personal, like it is, it's framed for me.
Yeah, right.
It's not written for you. And so I don't know, there may be ways of which you could take it wrong. I don't want you to. And so, but if it's important to you,
right,
I will show it to you.
Yeah.
And so then it'll be her choice.
It's not meant to be a report card to her. Like it's something for you.
Yeah.
Now, like how I approach things like that, we would have a conversation and we'd say, well, what is it you want me to do? You know, and oh, I like this. Okay. Then I'd make my own little list and I have a little check off thing. So I could just every day I could check that off. But that's just for me. Whether she ever saw it or not, I wouldn't care.
Right.
I'd have
That's true.
You know?
Actually, that's a really good point. If you were just trying to write some to-dos for the day on a sticky note, you wouldn't feel compelled to go, hey, I got to show my wife my sticky note.
No.
The only problem was if she reached for the sticky note and then you go, I don't want you to look at my to-do for today.
I'm a sloth.
You know, right.
Right.
This is to help me not be a sloth.
Right. It goes to the same thing as we were having a conversation before. Before the show started around like levels of accountability and like, so like we've talked on the show before, like multiple folks that related to food or gas station visits or whatever, saying no to things. And like, as an example, my wife, I think said to me one time, like I think I was buying coffee and it wasn't even like fancy coffee at the time. It was like gas station coffee, but wasn't making it before I left the house. I would take a kid to school and then get coffee and at the gas station or something. And I think I'd done it like in her mind, something reasonable was if you did it 3 times in 2 weeks, that seemed reasonable. In my mind, like stopping every day to get a coffee at a gas station while you're out and about did not seem unreasonable at all. And so if I were to cut that in half, like which would be a significant effort from what I thought was fine, it still wouldn't touch what her level was. And so from an accountability perspective, I could tell that same story to Dan and go, hey, Dan, I've been trying to do better and I'm down over the last 2 weeks. I stopped 7 times and not 10. And Dan might be encouraging in that because he might go, hey, making progress, man, less than what you were. I would be embarrassed to mention to my wife how often I think about stopping and getting something or blah, blah, blah. And again, some of that falls into the encouragement bucket and things that we both can be better at in our marriage. But like, I don't think that it's wrong of like, I'm not hiding that from her. If she were to go, hey, just stop the gas station, I would say, yeah, sure would. But like, it goes to a question of full transparency all the time, like vomiting of it, I'm not sure is absolutely necessary because you're your own people. Like you're going to do things in different ways.
Yeah.
And some of the things are causing, I don't need to know, for example, if my wife, like I said, we homeschool, if whatever, I wouldn't even care about any of these things actually. But like, if she were like, you know, 2 hours, we just decided not to do school today. I said, kids, go do whatever you want, and I caught up on reading a few texts and whatever. Like, I don't need to know that. I don't care. Like, as a general rule, I trust you. Things are going fine. You tell me if you need any help, and I'll be glad to help you. But, like, don't feel like you have to report to me your failures for today unless you want to. Like, if you want to share them with me. And I wouldn't consider that hiding or dodging. And so
it's because they're fundamentally different people when it comes to like what is important.
Totally. Totally.
That is, Ben, that's difficult communication in any situation.
Yes. Yes. And so the thing that to work through, and this is true for marriages and friendships and all the things, is that like recognizing you're completely different people. Marriages are different, of course, because like you want to make sure it does not give you safe harbor for nefarious dealings.
Right, yes.
And for things that you're hiding from your wife or your spouse or whatever, like you don't need you should be a totally open book, but someone has to choose to read it. I don't have to chuck the book from the library all the time at her face. I just don't think that's necessary. Yeah. And but you do need to test it, because it is a caution that you could start to get to a place where, like, you just get comfortable spending money and not saying anything about it. Or things that you know they wouldn't approve of and they would tell you to stop, but you don't want to stop. And so you don't mention it. You know, like, there's a danger in it. There's a danger in it for sure, which is why I brought it up.
Yeah.
All right. You're listening to Live from the Path. Do you have any feedback for me? Hit us up on the Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. If you feel like I'm completely out of line and you know my wife and you want her to listen to the show, it'll all give it away. It's totally fine. I obviously recognize that releasing this to 8 people on the interwebs opens up the possibility that she'll find out. However, maybe you have similar situations or other things that you're going through that you're like, well, I don't know. This feels grayish. Maybe you want Live from the Path to speak on it, given our advice today. But anyway, Live from the Path, Bob Eisler, complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. I would love to hear your comments.
So I think it's kind of fun, actually, that you're that sensitive to this, which shows how, generally speaking, like, what am I trying to say? Like, if my wife picked up my phone, I would give a rip. Because whatever.
Yeah.
Dude, look, it's... search for anything. I mean, they have nothing to hide, and that's generally how you are.
Yes,
but you have this thing of like, oh no, it's just kind of cool that you were sensitive to that, and like almost anxious about, well, I don't want you to see that.
Yeah,
you know, but it wasn't bad.
No, and yeah, in some ways, you know, it's interesting because that some of it feels like a gift.
Yeah,
and it's probably a right balancing. So it's in fact it's fundamentally wrong to go, I will be a gift and do things roughly, you know, better in my house. Like, we just need help.
Yeah.
And so that's, I don't want to think of it that way. But there was something where, like, I didn't want to, like, if she were to look, just think back 6 weeks from now and go, you know, things have actually been a lot different. And that's great. I would like her to be able to receive that openly, as opposed to feeling like, again, like, I don't want her to feel like, to your point, like, she's going to manage, like, let me check your list. Like, right, I don't want that to happen at all.
No.
And it would tank it. Anyway, I'll be honest, I have actually suggested to a couple other fellas within the last few weeks doing this very thing. And I was actually going to have my kids do it too. I keep neglecting to talk to them about it. But like, because again, you just, it's odd. It's odd if you don't examine your days, like you get under some weird impressions that you just don't realize.
Sure.
I thought I did a lot more. I thought I'd done a lot better. Especially like when there's key things going on in our house and I realize that 2 weeks could go by and like I didn't pick up the broom. Now it's fine. Like there's older kids in my house. Things are normal that my wife would do. I fix the lawnmower. She generally brooms. Okay, fine. But like realistically, does it make sense that 2 weeks could go by and I never saw anything that would otherwise cause me to go, you know, it's going to take me 30 seconds. I should go grab that broom and sweep this up, especially with the gravel driveway. No, that's actually not acceptable. That means I'm not paying attention. Damn. And so anyway, I just in case it's helpful, if I start a movement, then I feel like it goes down easier with my wife. But fellas, maybe just keep track of it for like a week or two and see if you feel like, yeah, this is rightly balanced, or, you know, you think you're nailing it and maybe you're not. And so just write it down. Keep a journal.
Gosh, the journal thing is super helpful for me because, like, in my past, I have been so lazy.
Yep.
Like, so incredibly lazy. I would go weeks without cleaning my place when I lived by myself. Like, it was bad. It was really bad. And so in a relentless pursuit to break that, I'm fairly mindful of, like, when my laziness tries to take over. And so, like, ever since getting married, it's funny because I think, wow, she's stuck with me, and I feel terrible about that most of the time. So, like, how much worse would it be if she was stuck with me and I didn't do the dishes? Is a very good, like, thing to motivate me sometimes. But, like, I'll find myself where I'm like, I'll see a piece of trash on the floor next to a trash can, and I'll be like, I'll pick that up later. And then I'll take 3 steps, and I'll turn around, and I'll be like, it's the stupidest crap you've ever said. Why? You looked at it, you saw it, go do it right now. Yeah. Like, go back and do that right now and throw it away.
Because you know she'll do it.
Well,
after you walk away.
The interesting thing in my household is, like, my wife does a great job of, like, oh, this is going to sound so bad. She's fantastic. I love her to death. I'm home all the time, and so, like, I see stuff more often than she does. Uh-huh. And, like, cleaning happens for her when she's, like, has days off at work because she's away from home at work. For me, like, I'll be on a meeting, and then I'll take my dish to the sink, and then I'll realize after that meeting, hey, go do that dish real quick and throw it in the sink, like, or throw it in the dishwasher, get it done, and then go back to work because I'm 10 feet away from it all day. And so, but anyway, I just say that to say that, like, the journaling can help me on both sides of that, to where, one, I can kind of praise myself to go, like, hey, man, you're not as lazy as you think you are sometimes. Like, you do, right, you do good things. But then the flip side of, like, but maybe there's even more you could do. And, like, but that's okay. Like, find those kind of things. So
yeah, yeah. And it could work. Getting back, I actually think the intimacy check marks aren't bad if you have the right heart about it.
Yeah.
Because, like, sometimes, you know, it's – you probably should put some effort into things happening,
right,
more often.
Yep.
And if you're getting busy and going, you know, look, we did not make time,
right,
for making time. And, like, I knew Boova would love that.
Oh, there's his shirt right there. That. T-shirt of the day.
I hated that so much.
I knew he would love it, so I said it.
I agree with it so much, and I hate it so,
right,
much.
But here's the thing. And, like, either side of the relationship, there's always something that you know is important to somebody.
Yeah.
And, like, sometimes you don't realize – when it's important to them, then they are more aware of it than you are, that the thing is missing. Just, like,
right,
frankly, and we've talked about this before, so I won't belabor the point, but, like, oftentimes the person who's home, or, like, the person who's primarily responsible for taking care of all the things in the house recognizes all the things that aren't done, where I just might walk
right
by them. I rarely think about the cat litter as an example. And so – you know, she's going to be very aware of something. And, like, I legitimately hadn't put 2 seconds of thought into it.
Yeah.
But what it looks like is that I'm neglectful about it. And so I actually – my journaling has expanded a little bit. Now there's, like, rough pockets of here's something that happened today. Like, if it took a significant amount of time out of my day, I wrote it down. Or, like, you know, I realize how long has it been since I've – you know, my wife and I have made time to go out on a date. Well,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't want my whole life to be a series of, like, check boxes and tracking 50 things.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm trying to get to. However, if I don't track at least loosely some of these things, I can't – it's getting my focus right now.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to get my focus until I have better habits. And then something else probably will get my focus and I can start,
yep,
keeping, you know, notes of it or whatever. But, like, it's just been super helpful. And frankly, it's allowed me to – I'll look back and I'll see, well, there's a day where I literally didn't do anything. Or, like, a gap where I'm like, what happened? I was out of town. But you know what that should remind me? Not, aha, I'm off the hook because I didn't do anything, but I was out of town. It's like, that means my wife took the full burden on when,
right,
I was gone. Did I say something? Did I,
yeah,
say, baby, thank you. I know I was out of town. I know the whole, how you took care of everything while I was gone, and I appreciate it.
That's
you do
huge.
Great work around here, right? Like, it reminds me to then do better,
yeah,
at pointing out good things. I'm not likely to point out, like, negative things, but I'm not great pointing out,
right,
positive things either. And so, anyway, whatever. Just don't overbook your life. But I think writing some stuff down every once in a while, especially if it needs focus, is not – it's good. It's been helpful to me.
Yeah.
All right. Let's give out some advice.
All right. Dear Life of the Pain.
My husband does not pick up
anything. My husband does not pick up anything in our house
and,
at all.
And he's hiding and notes to Lorraine in his journal.
He puts X's on his calendar every time.
Right.
My niece, Elle, and her husband, Liam, have been self-employed for 20 years, but due to the economy, Liam decided to go into the workforce. He is now employed at a state job with great pay and benefits for them and their 4 children.
Okay.
Our family is elated for him and his family, except Elle. It's unbelievable how determined she is to get her husband fired. She can't stand for Liam to be away from her. She fights daily with him, telling him he has chosen a job over his family. They were always a nice family unit, but now Elle is destroying it because of the insecure, overbearing control she needs to have. It's heartbreaking to see, especially since their teenage kids are looking for other places to sleep due to the constant arguments.
Wow.
I wish I could make Elle understand that this job means they will no longer be struggling financially, but she doesn't care. She wants to be near Liam at all times. The situation is awful. I can't believe they may end up in divorce court because her husband got a great state job. Your thoughts on this, please?
That is a tough position to be in for the dude.
Right.
You're doing the thing. Well, okay. Let's start with, where can I sympathize with the wife? You work with your husband for 20 years, and he has to find a job that is not working with you all the time. I can understand how you would prefer the other thing.
Yeah.
That would be great. And but it is not his reality. It is your reality. Like, you're as a couple. These are, it is a we reality. We can't make our bills. We,
right.
Although working outside, have been getting away with this for 20 years, and that was fantastic, are not in a position where we can continue to do that. And so it is not fair to act like it is simply his decision, like he's off on some sort of like personal midlife crisis.
Right.
He's doing a we thing by taking a job so that we continue to sustain ourselves and live the life to support the kids and stuff. And like, it is extremely short-sighted and selfish. And frankly, double problematic to make the man feel guilty
yep.
for doing what was necessary to support his family.
Right. Agreed.
That's rough times. I would – now, there's something very unhealthy about that level of clinginess. Yeah. Like yeah. you should be able to be away from your spouse. I get that you might miss them. That's totally fine. But you should be able to be away from them without frankly, allowing them to live a bit of their own life. Without you having to be together all the time. I would suggest maybe taking up a hobby or getting a job yourself for a while. Maybe you guys can start to, you know, stockpiling. And then if you want to relaunch as, your own business again in 2 or 3 years when the economy looks better, you got a good stash of cash and your kids are out the house, great. Like, that might even be a good place. So you like, it's okay to say what we ideally want is both of us working together again. Put that on the goal sheet, man. Write it on the board. Figure out how you're going to get there. But you're not going to get there by having the dude quit his job and you don't make the money that you need where you weren't making it before, and then yep. everyone's got – you're just going to be fighting over different things.
It doesn't right. seem like she's given him much reason to want to be home.
Also
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, gosh,
it's like,
yeah.
He's like, I'm sure glad I got this job. So, okay. I have a dog who really likes me to be home.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Loves it when I'm home. Just gets really anxious and sad when I leave. And so at some point, I thought, man, I need to make this a positive for my little dog, Turk. And so I got a bag of those no rawhide stick chew things.
Yep.
And so every morning now, I'll leave. I give him that. And then he is very happy that I'm leaving. And I'm very happy. And we all leave in a happy. Matter of fact, he will, on the day I'm not leaving, he'll be trying to push me out the door. He can't. He's like, would you, you know. We
get out of
here. We have a pattern here, and I want my treat.
Right? Like, if you leave, I get this thing.
This is good. This is good. So I'm not saying you get dog treats, mm-hmm. but like you mentioned, you get a hobby, do something, just make some positive thing. Well, he's gone, and when he's gone, I do X.
Yeah.
Whatever that is. I read a chapter of a book. I,
yep.
Something. And that way it's a positive, and you're redirecting your mind from, oh, it's really sad he's not yep. here, and I wish we could hold hands and, you know, call clients all day. But whatever it is you did, find something, some outlet that you have that gives you something to look forward to.
Yep.
So. Dan, I recognize that you did say this is not what you're saying, but I do love a world in which what you're saying is positive behavioral recognition.
Yes.
By handing her a Dutch letter every morning as you walk out the house. Go, baby, I know you love the flavor of almond. Here you go. And then you leave. And then you come back and she goes, man, thanks for that Dutch letter, Dad. Like, that was the best.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I wish you'd leave more often.
That's right.
All right.
Give me a dozen of those.
Oh, gosh. Secular says, I think your niece's insecurity and insistence on having her husband on a short leash at all times is unhealthy, to say the least. She needs professional help, and Liam should insist upon it. If she refuses, he will then have to decide whether the current status of their marriage is something he wants to tolerate for the foreseeable future and plan his next steps accordingly.
Yeah. You didn't really say the least.
Yeah, you didn't. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You kept going.
Yeah, to say the least.
And I'm going to maybe add in here as well that she's talking about her niece. There's a good chance you really don't know all the facts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
I mean...
Yeah. Yeah, you might be getting it from the kids that are reaching out looking for a place to sleep.
Right, right.
Like, and you know that's not a trustworthy place. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it is. It is true. And actually, Boov and I have talked about this recently. That like you almost never was that you and I were talking about it? Maybe, but like you almost never get a whole story.
Yes.
Right. Like everyone's a fallible narrator.
Yep, right. Yeah.
And so I would maybe like if you only got one person talking, maybe vet it out a little bit. Maybe offer to talk to them both. Why don't you do that? Why don't you invite them over? And say,
before you offer divorce.
Yeah, right. talk it through with them.
Yeah, if you're the close aunt that can have that conversation, great.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, here's the thing. is that like what could be difficult for the lady is not only that her husband's gone, but like he's almost crafting a life without her. Not intentionally, but like he's think about it this way. If let's say let's just go with the traditional work setup.
Mm-hmm.
He leaves his house the morning at 7:30, 8 o'clock. He's going to listen to a radio program or a podcast or music that they are not both listening to. She's not used to that. They're used to being together, working together, whatever, right? He's having lunch with coworkers that she doesn't know. He's got stories that she has not privy to, like a whole context of his life. And for a long time, too. He's got, let's say he works 8 hours a day. You got a half an hour either side of commute. You're 9 hours, and that's if you're not stopping random places. Like she didn't just lose – that's right, at a gas station. She didn't just lose like a marriage or like a coworker. He also has a life that feels like is going on without her. Now, that's not the reality. Like, I mean, it is in some ways, but like, there's no reason to see it that way.
Yeah.
But like, there's a lot to reckon with here. And like, if you're the type of person who's a bit clingy in here, this is going to feel worse than just, well, thanks for taking one for the team. Do what you have to do.
Exactly.
Because like, the reality is, sometimes I've had this conversation at my house, is that like, I know, like, sometimes my work does not come up with, a lot of the deadlines are a little bit squidgy, and I get to choose. Like, my day gets partitioned out, but, like, I kind of get to maneuver around if I want to. I get to say no to things if I want. Sometimes I get to leave early if I want to. Like, it feels luxurious, but, like, it's not really. Like, I have my own separate life. Like, oh, well, you went out to lunch. I'm like, I just ate lunch. Like, it feels exotic.
Right. Yes, I didn't go on a trip.
Right.
Chicken nuggets.
And even traveling – because I'll travel every once in a while, and like it feels like, oh, you got to stay in the night at a hotel. I'm like, the last time I was out at a real divey Hyatt. Like it wasn't, Hyatts sound nice, but this, whatever that was, the weirdest conference.
It was a Lowit.
Like, the Hyatt was like super nice. It was a really nice one, except for they wanted like $400 a night for the room. And I said, I'm not doing that. And so I ended up at a Hyatt that was close to there. This was not the same level of Hyatt. It looked like an apartment building.
Oh no.
All right. At which, like, I mean, okay, I got to spend some time where, like, other people weren't dragging for my attention. Totally. But it was not luxurious. It was, like, I would have preferred to be in my own bed and at my own house. But it seems different. And so, like, I sympathize with her. I'm not even sure it's a counseling problem yet. It's definitely not a divorce problem. It may not even be a counseling problem. It's just a transition of life thing. And so invite them over. Maybe you can be the center who helps navigate. Is the husband being insensitive to those things?
Right.
Even if he wouldn't have felt them, maybe the dude would have no problem settling in. He just acclimates to his life. But it's different for her because it feels like she's left behind. Okay, maybe he needs to handle things a little bit more sensitively. Maybe he needs to come right home, make sure he's not doing anything extra so that it doesn't feel so different until she can get used to it. So like, I would say it's a talk through first before it's counseling, and then it's probably counseling, and then it's still not divorce. It's figuring out how to acclimate to this new reality.
Yeah, I think he should maybe make a note in his phone of different things that he can do.
Right.
Maybe monitor that.
Right. Take a look at it.
She'll feel more fulfilled, and so will he.
That's right. That's right.
We got time for one more?
I've got time for one more. And another thing.
Dear Lab from the Path, my husband and I retired 6 years ago and moved from California to Texas. I have 2 grown sons, and my husband has 2 grown daughters still living in Cali. My husband's oldest daughter, 50, just came to visit along with her 10-year-old daughter. On the Sunday they were to leave, my husband was to take them to the airport in the morning and leave me home to read my Sunday paper. Before they left, his daughter wanted a picture of all of us together. I told her I didn't want a picture taken in my nightgown, but she said it would only be from the neck up. I acquiesced, and she took the shot. 2 days later, former clients of mine from California posted on Facebook how glad they were to see me look so happy in retirement. My husband showed me the Facebook posting of me from the waist up in my nightgown on his daughter's page. I don't go on Facebook. I don't want my likeness on Facebook. And I'm not happy that after expressing my feelings about having my picture taken in my nightgown, his daughter put me on Facebook. Isn't it common decency to ask someone before arbitrarily posting their picture on Facebook?
I don't know if it's common decency.
It's not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's absolutely
you could make a case that it would be good. It's a good idea to say like, hey, do you mind if I post this on Facebook?
And she's 10.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't the
10-year-old
that posted. It was the 50-year-old.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The 10-year-old wanted the photo. The 50-year-old posted it.
without cropping it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Waist up in a nightgown.
Well, I mean, why didn't...
Sounds like a terrible album
name. You just
name.
Change your clothes real quick.
She was very excited to be in her nightgown reading her Sunday paper, Ben.
Is she like Angel Reese, everything kind of flopping out?
Yeah.
I don't want to think about or answer that question.
I'm just, why would you be so upset if everything's covered?
Yeah. I mean, maybe, yeah.
I mean, I don't like to be seen in my nightgown, regardless of what's covered.
Right.
I don't look great in a muumuu, Dan. It's just the truth.
I can picture it.
It's tie-dye. Don't worry about it.
Oh, that does change the image. Hold on. Recalibrating.
Recalibrating opinion.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. A tie-dye muumuu. Say no more.
Where does the circle originate? Where's the radius? So
I must see the pattern.
You need to let this go. I think it would make sense. Like if she knew you were sensitive about it, and so is it necessary to post the picture? No, it's not. The world would have continued turning without a picture of you in your nightgown for sure. And so the 50-year-old daughter, certainly, I think, should have respected your wishes. However, I would submit two things to you. If she wanted a picture to commemorate the moment, I think you should have said, give me 5 minutes. Let me change my clothes.
That would have been good.
Like, what is in this paper that you haven't, like...
My crosswords.
Yeah. It'll be there whether you have a blouse on or not. Okay? And so you should have offered to change your clothes. Secondly, even though she did post it, like, what do you care?
And so far, experientially, the only two things that have happened are residents that go, or your previous clients that go, hey, you look happy.
Yeah, right. They took it positively. And like, most people don't love pictures of themselves anyway. And so like, I wouldn't worry about it. Like even if they saw it, and even if you weren't your best, things are lower than they should be. The makeup's not on like you would want, whatever.
Oh, gosh.
Like, okay. And so what? What are you, like 75? What is like? It's time to give it up.
The thing is, though,
things are lower than they should be.
I often
it's the concern in the 90s.
I often will post embarrassing pictures of myself because I think it's funny that everybody tries to put the best.
Dan gets ahead of it.
What's that?
I said Dan gets ahead of it.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, you're not going to find a photo of me.
Because I really don't care.
I'm going to post it.
If I have something on my teeth, I'll make sure I post that.
Right.
You know, I do something stupid, I'll post that. And. The problem, because so many people try to put their very, very best, like they, and I realize that for that reason, I often ask people's permission. Hey, can I put this on?
You know,
just out of courtesy, especially my family. I can't think of any family member I've never just thrown them up there. But if she's not even on it, why does she care?
Yeah, what do you care?
Yeah, right. It's like if she's not going to see it again. Nobody cares that much. It's not like they framed it and put it on their wall. You know,
right.
It's like, okay, they saw that, like, and they went on with their life and liked 17 cat videos.
Right.
So,
it reminded them of you.
Yeah.
And that you existed, and it brought back happy memories.
And thought you looked relaxed and retired.
And the person that says, I don't want my likeness on Facebook is also the same person that if they had a Facebook, they would share that stupid thing that gets shared around by all the old people on Facebook every time that says, I own all of this and I don't let anyone take all of my pictures and you can't have it, internet. And by the way, my actual profile picture is a recipe for a snickerdoodle.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Here's what I know is our generation as like recognized that like the game is up, man. They have you.
Yes, they do.
They have
100%.
You. 100%. Whatever protection you think is going on. And
I don't even have my birth certificate. I don't exist.
Get off Facebook if you want to. Every grocery store's got you on film. people are filming you all the time. There's a guy, we work with a guy who's like very adamant. Like he people can't take his picture because they're going to. There's a hotel I was at Minneapolis one time, and like when you walk in the door, they take your – it just takes your photo and puts it up on a big screen. Like, okay, it was supposed to be hip. This was a weird hotel. Another Hyatt now that I think about it.
You need to get out of these Hyatts.
I take that back. It was a Radisson Red. I got to find this picture. There was like a devil reindeer in the shower tile, and then some surprised spaceman painted – on the back of the wall behind the beds. Like, he's like, okay, hold on. I'm going to get a big. It was something like this. Like his phone's. weird as crap. No. Anyway, the guy we worked with was like, he was lit up about it. He's like, they can't just take your image like that. They're going to own your image. I'm like, dude, you live in Minneapolis, like, or near it. They have you. You ever go in a gas station? They have you.
Yep.
Everybody, so you've ever been like, someone's taking videos all the time and you walk by in the distance. We've given
all
up
of that is compiling. Yes.
Given it up. Yeah. And so, it's time to let it loose. Whatever image, like, I understand. If your gut reaction is, I wish she wouldn't have done that. Okay. Take a breath, realize nobody cares, and you shouldn't care either, and let it go.
All right. You ready for secular's advice?
I'm ready.
I'm going to assume that your husband's daughter didn't post the family picture on her page to inflame you. She may have forgotten her promise to you. Because this isn't the impression of your happy retirement you want to convey, ask her to take it down and hope she complies. If she doesn't, do not pose for any more family pictures when she's behind the camera.
I find people asking folks to take stuff down pretentious. Just in general.
Yeah.
It's happened to the show a few times. We've had people reach out and go, hey, will you take my videos down?
Yeah, higher standards.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Like, I understand. In fact, that's generally what I'll respond back. Like, I could see disassociating yourself from the show. I've thought about it myself. Right.
I'm too ingrained.
That's what I said externally. But internally, I thought, you pretentious turd. Like, what do you care? Yeah. It was like someone's going to go dig up this old interview unless you've left the faith. And then I would understand it. But frankly, if you've left the faith and you're going to advocate for it, you could at least go see, look how I was.
This is what I used to be.
Right. We're not that embarrassing. Like, we're embarrassing, I get it, but, like, we're not that embarrassing. And so I do actually find it pretentious. It's the same reason where, like, I've never actually pulled a program. We've had programs where it wasn't a good show, and then the Lord has erased the tapes. Like, the file didn't save, the computer crashed, and I legitimately couldn't post it. That's probably happened a good half dozen times. We would look back and go, man, that wasn't a good show.
Thank
anyway.
God.
No
Thank
problem.
God for that.
Yeah. But like, I've never not released a show, even if it wasn't a good one. Cause I'm like, man, it was what we did.
Right.
Take it in. may you learn your lesson from our ridiculousness.
This is me.
Actually, I always have that too. I live with, I got four kids and three of them are girls. And, like, it's often they're like, Dad, did you see your hair? I'm like, no. I didn't. One, I don't have any, and two, I didn't look at it. Or my wife will be like, "Hey, it's time to." I got hair coming out my ear. She's like, "Did you look?" I'm like, "Nope." I'll tell you this: I haven't examined my ear in probably 3 weeks. Why? Like, and it's because in general, I'm like, "This is what I look like."
Yeah.
I was like, "Dad, can you?"
True.
I can't believe that you're going out like that. I'm like, "It's what I. What am I going to do?" Like, I made peace with myself a long time ago.
Right.
I'm a very average looking man. And I have an average-looking receding hairline. There's no distinct figure about me. Like, I'm just a very normal-looking fellow. And I don't think anything about that.
It's okay.
It's who I am. See, what am I supposed to do?
That's funny, because I'm ugly, and I know that, and I'm fine with that. But, like, I have – if there's any manicuring that I've done to my appearance and or what I put out to the world, it's for your good, people, not mine. Yeah. Like, I'm not actually doing any of this for me. Like, I wear undershirts because no one likes the belly. Like, if I reach up to grab a canned good off the top for a lady, I don't want any hangage coming out from under my shirt. So I wear undershirts. I also know how big guys are usually classified as the fellas who have, like, 11 and a half miles of butt crack. And it's like, you know what I don't have? That. Because I wear undershirts. And it's for your good.
Oh, you still have it. It's just covered up.
Right. True. Yes, exactly. It's covered up. Fine. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with not being the guy that people are like, I'm sorry. I can't focus on what I'm doing right now. Do you see that gentleman over there that is spilling over the top of his clothing like a muffin that had too much muffin put into the muffin tin?
Yeah.
It's
the plumb line of the temple over there.
Uh-huh. Nobody says that about me. They go, wow, that guy is appropriately dressed with the correct sized clothing.
Here's the deal. But it's not true, though. Like, you're I would say you're a normal looking fella, maybe actually a plus one. I mean, not plus 10 for certain. But like, you're not.
I mean, I appreciate that you're giving me a plus one here.
You're not. I mean, you're not an unfortunate looking man.
I would say that the vast majority of society would disagree with that.
I don't think.
Which I don't care about. I'm married, and I'm married to a very beautiful woman.
Yeah, I don't think
people see us and go, wait, what?
Yeah, I don't think that's true. But irrelevant, though. The point is that, like, I mean, you are who you are.
Yeah.
And like,
you just want to work with.
You may take pains to try to do the best you can with what you have.
Yep.
But there's no reason to act like this is not, like, I don't have any more than this. This is what I have available to work with.
This is why I go to a good barber. His name's Nice Guy Ian. He's great. And that's the only thing I got to go with is that's the presentable thing I can fix. Mm-hmm. Make my hair look good.
Yeah. Shave my eyebrows a little. Give it some
definition. He'll do it.
Yeah.
He'll do it. I've never asked him to, but he'll do it.
I don't. Yeah. Anyway, you're listening to Life from the Path. Maybe you're average looking. I think you should embrace that. You are who you are. And if someone ever posts a unfortunate picture of you on Facebook, you go, well, I mean, that's what I must look like at the time. The photo evidence affirms it.
Unless this has been tampered with.
Like, hey, we should post an embarrassing photo of Dad. I'm like, it's what I look like. What is it? Like, it's no takey backsies.
It's not embarrassing. That's just me.
Yeah. Anyway, you're listening to Life from the Path. Make sure to hit up that complaint line, 515-517-0085. Hey, another thing, if you've not, this is the time to clean up your social media feed. So if you've not liked Life from the Past, so you can get reminded of all the old shows that are being coming up there posting, you should go like that. We're posting every 10 hours. There's a fresh retro hit coming your way, and you should get in on that. Also,
that I don't agree with me either. So, like, whatever you're going to listen to that's old and you don't agree with me on, I probably don't agree with me either. It's
no,
fine.
We've said some sketchy things for sure. Also, if you've not left a comment or rated the show on your podcast app, may this be the time. In fact, I want you to start a note journal every day and just indicate whether you remembered to rate the podcast and leave a comment as to how great it is or how if it's terrible, whatever. Just be kind to people and say true things. And that way you can keep track of it. So if I ask you, you would be able to say, no, sir, actually, I admit that every last 13 days I've not done that. But you should remember to do it. And then I won't. Then every time I say it, it's not to you. It's to the other poor schlub who's not done it. And so you should just get it off your list. Okay? Taxes first, and then rate Life from the Path. And then you should call your dad or something. See how he's doing. In that order.
Wow.
You've been listening to Life from the Path. We are going to cut you loose. It is very likely we will be back next week, although I suppose we'll see how it goes. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.